assurance and mindfulness of the power to assist other friends in the test by Sri Vedana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu starts the Pitam Yoga Tarasa and the Pathalama and the Bhakti Sakhana to come. One support of the Buddhist to be the same as the able to help the people and the other people. We're still reading from the Bhagavad Gita, in case anyone was wondering. Do you remember what we read last time? One verse. The last one. Right? Which means that we're now going to begin the first verse of chapter 6. Now, this point Krishna's going to make here, almost for the last time, but it's such an important point, so you should listen very carefully. Anasita kama fal kayam kama karotiya na sanyasi chayogita na niragni na chakriya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. So in the third chapter and the fifth chapter, Arjuna asks the question. Both those chapters began with Arjuna asking about, is it better for me to give up work and to be fully renounced and detached, or is it better for me to work? And why has he asked that question? Because on one level he's on the battle of, it's right before the battle of Kurukshetra, and he sees horrible results occurring from his work as a warrior, as a fighter, as a killer. Fighter, warrior means killer. So he's going to have to kill, he's going to have to kill beloved persons, relatives even, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are going to be killed. And he sees that right in front of his eyes. And he thinks, what is the purpose of this fighting? It's to make my family place them on the royal throne. It's just not worth it. So I prefer to go to the forest and renounce all work and not entangle myself in all this killing. So he was looking at it from the point of view of a person who was working to gain some specific result that he thinks will be pleasurable to him. We all work to gain a result that we think will be pleasurable for us. But Krishna is actually telling him, and in the absence of getting that pleasurable result, then someone will naturally not want to work, because he's working to gain something that will bring him pleasure. And if he doesn't see the opportunity to get pleasure through that work, or the misery outweighs the pleasure, he doesn't want to work. So that's the mentality of a fruitive person. That's an Iskani word, fruitive. What do we mean by fruitive?
Who's attached to the results of their work?
Yes, and why do we call it fruitive?
Like planting a tree, you know, you work in me and the tree produces a fruit.
Yeah, and if it wasn't going to produce some result that was favorable to you, that you wanted, you wouldn't bother undergoing the work of planting the tree. So that mentality of working to get something as a result is what we call fruit of work. And that type of mentality when performing work brings not only the fruit, but it brings a reaction, karma. It brings a reaction. That one is entangled in the law, the complex laws of material nature with that mentality. So what Krishna is telling Arjuna, has told him on what to do on a few levels. One level is do the work, and this is the level he's going to speak about here. Do the work, but be detached from the fruit. Completely opposite. Do the work to get the fruit, but do the work in a detached spirit, just because it's your duty, because you're supposed to work in that way. And the fruits sometimes will come positively, sometimes they'll come negatively, and they'll come positively if the time is right and our fate is right. They'll come negatively if the time is right and our fate is right. So they come and they go. And in the Prahlad Maharaj, Sukham Andriya, Indriya, anyway, Sukham, the point being that just as misery and unhappiness, dukkha, comes without you having to endeavor for it, we don't endeavor to become miserable, but we don't, but we're not free from misery. It comes to us by its, in its own way. So similarly, happiness comes too. So Krishna tells Arjuna, be niskam. Do your work in a niskam fashion, or in the mood of detachment from the results. What's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm going to act in a dutiful way, in a proper way, nevertheless. Now the concept of doing something dutifully, regardless of the result, is not a very popular concept nowadays. Increasingly so, people want more of a life than just going through one's life in a, just doing everything because you're supposed to do it, and then dying with not having fulfilled any of your desires. So there's truth in that. But to go through life wanting to act fruitively to gain only your material happiness is not a proper response to the fact that just a simple, dutiful, materialistic life isn't satisfying. So what Krishna really wants to say is the third alternative. First alternative is work fruitively or fight to gain kingdom, the kingdom of heaven. The second alternative is to work and be detached. Work dutifully because you're a warrior, you should fight, but be detached from the fruit of your work. Victory or defeat is not in your hands. You try your best. But so that's detached work, and you don't become entangled in reactions if you perform detached work, because you don't want the fruit, you don't get the reactions. But what Krishna really wants to say is, I want you to work for me. And working for my pleasure. Now, do your work for me and give the fruit to me. That is called bhakti. Work for me with devotion. And that also has many levels. So we're talking about doing the same activity on, but there's so many different levels of consciousness by which, in which one can perform the activity in. Because one could be fighting, for example, if one's a warrior, and trying to reap the booty of the kingdom. And one could be also fighting in a detached way, whatever the results come, and the result of that is liberation. The result of the first way is you get some material rewards, jewelry or whatever, as you loot the kingdom. And the result of the second way is you're detached, so you get liberation. And the result of the third way, fighting for Krishna, or doing your work for Krishna, being impelled to work in such a way that Krishna will be pleased, and the work and the fruit get offered to him, that's bhakti. And then when the impetus to do the work for Krishna is because it says so in the Bhagavad Gita, that's one kind of bhakti. And when the impetus to work for Krishna's pleasure is because you spontaneously and naturally have affection for him, because you naturally, out of your affection, want to please him, that is another kind of bhakti. So that's five different levels of consciousness, and a person could be doing the same work, or five different people could be doing the same work, but in completely different consciousnesses, and getting completely different results from their work. So really, the Bhagavad Gita wishes to teach us what is proper consciousness and what is improper consciousness. And ultimately Krishna is going to say, all consciousness that isn't fully surrendered to me is improper consciousness. That's what Krishna is going to say. He's going to take a very strong stand by the end and even say, I've told you so many different levels of consciousness, and I've recommended them to you as this is, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. But actually they're incrementally or better by stage by stage by stage, but all of them, Krishna will say by the end, are inferior to just acting in devotion for me. And why is that? Why is it inferior? Why are all the other levels inferior?
Because it doesn't need love.
Yeah, because, exactly. Because Srila Jiva Goswami describes that to get the actual goal of human existence, to awaken fully one's relationship with Krishna, the consciousness by which one acts with that will awaken that love and evoke Krishna's mercy that will bestow that love, both awaken and bestow, that consciousness is one of bhakti, but not bhakti that's mixed, not devotion that's mixed, but it has to be anya abhilasita sunyam jnanakama anavrita. It has to be free from any mixtures, any adulterations, any compounds. What do you mix into iron to make it steel?
Me.
No, we're not going to mix you into iron. That was not what I had in mind, so you don't have to worry. You can sleep safely tonight.
Aluminium? I'm not sure.
Carbon, carbon.
Huh? Yeah, I asked the wrong person. What is it?
The carbon we add.
We add carbon.
And to make it stainless steel, we add chromium and nickel.
Okay. And then what do we add it to make the stainless steel that gets stained like you buy in Vrindavan? How do you do that? No, it's not bhakti. It's something else.
It is.
What you
I didn't really want an answer to that question. And how would you know anyway? That's what I want to know.
I am
from Delhi. Yeah, that's the answer. Okay, I'm actually curious about this. How come it doesn't work?
I'm a metallurgist.
But okay, but how come it doesn't work?
Yeah, because.
What are they doing wrong? How are they trying to save money?
They bribe. They are.
Prabhu.
The main reason is they don't buy the actual thing they ought to buy.
But what is the actual thing that they put into the steel that makes it not actual?
Not
actual. Well, how come the stainless steel gets stained? That's what I want to find out. What do they put in it? What do they not put in it? Not enough chromium,
yes,
I think.
Yes, enough percentage of chromium.
Okay. They cheat on the chromium.
Because this chromium is very expensive.
Yes.
So.
When next time we buy stainless steel, we'll take you with us. What book are we reading again? I think it's the Bhagavad Gita, yes? Okay. So it should be not enough chromium, putting percussion in the onion. What are we talking about? So Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. So understand what he's saying. Unattached to the fruits of one's work. This is such a, not only a different type of concept than we are brought up with and that we are used to, but also it's very difficult to do, to work but to be unattached to the fruit. One who is unattached to the fruits of his work Because if we're unattached to the fruit of the work, then the next thing is we don't want to work. But who works as he is obligated, so put those two together, unattached but working, obligated meaning dutifully, he is in the renounced order of life. That is sannyasi, sa sannyasi cha yogi cha, and he is actually a yogi. So it's so interesting because yoga, what does yoga mean? What is our understanding of yoga? Yes.
Yoga means it's the connection with the Supreme.
So it's connection. And what is, and so he's talking about detachment and connection. So one would think detachment just brings detachment. But if you're detached from the fruit of your work and working, that detachment will bring a connection. So this is very mysterious. Because usually we think if we're, connection comes from attachment, but here detachment's going to bring the connection. But again, there are different levels of this type of the consciousness that one can work even in a detached way. Because one in this world cannot be completely detached. And in Krishna consciousness, the goal is not detachment, but it's complete, full attachment. Like, who are the best examples of those who are completely attached?
Gopis.
Yes, the residents of Vrindavan are so attached to Krishna that even if a moment passes that they don't see Krishna, their heart is breaking. We can't even imagine that type of attachment, because we don't in the material world we don't have those, we're too selfish to have that much attachment, too self-centered to be that attached. But they have such complete attachment for Krishna. They were so perfected in that way, and it was completely spontaneous, it was completely natural. Krita Punya Punya, about the cowherd boys of Vrindavan, Srila Sukadeva Goswami says. Krita Punya, this Sakyam Vijaru, Krita Punya Punya, that this ability to have Krishna, about the cowherd boys, and play with him as a friend and have such an intimate, loving relationship with him, it comes after years and years and years and births, punya punya, krita, of Krishna conscious piety. So each and every one of us is situated somewhere in some gradation or another on that path towards Krishna, towards having an intimate relationship with him. And again, the whole point of the relationship is one of attachment, an attachment to him and to his land and to his dear ones that will automatically, actually speaking, bring detachment from everything else of the material world. Because that attachment is so brilliant, and the ecstasy that attachment produces is so enticing that everything else is put in the perspective of being just a shadow as compared to reality. In other words, what's the difference between shadow and substance? Who are we going to ask this question? Do we ask it? Do we ask an accountant, a meteorologist, a student, or what's the difference?
Without substance, you cannot be a shadow. Because of the substance.
Huh? There's a connection. Is the substance the same as the shadow?
No.
But it's not completely different. Well, the shadow is. One is dependent and the other is independent, but you can't have in the material world, you can't have any substance without a shadow. Although I've heard that demigods don't cast shadows. Has anyone else heard that? Have you heard that one? You know about that? They didn't teach you that in the strength and materials classes or whatever. But everyone knows what's the Sanskrit word for shadow? Shadow is the Hindi word. How do you say shadow in Hindi? You already forgot. Shadow in Hindi. He said it. Okay. Anyway. Chai. And there's another word too, abhas. But abhas doesn't quite mean shadow. It's a reflection. So both the reflection and the shadow don't have the actual substance in it. So when one has the actual substance, one isn't attracted to the shadow or the reflection any longer. So that's our great quest, is to taste the substance. And if we try to become detached, even, and we have to try to become detached, but we don't get sufficient taste of the substance, then our attachment will be, our detachment will be just on the level of the mental platform. And it is always weak if it's on the level of the mental platform. So it's actually essential to gain taste for the substance and remain in that taste. So one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated, so those two things, is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic. He is the one who is actually connected, and he's actually doing something quite mysterious. Not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. So Krishna, again, this is the third time that he's dealing with this particular question about renunciation of work, or karma phala tyag, or karma tyag, or renunciation of work, or renunciation of the fruit of one's work. And each time he strongly says that we wish to become detached from the fruit of the work, but not from the work itself. And that is actually true renunciation. Now we said that it's difficult to even conceive of it, practically speaking. It's difficult to do. And why is it difficult to conceive of it? Because according to our natures, it's very difficult to have any impetus. Again, it's difficult to even want to do anything unless there's something in it for me. And this is even the tendency for devotees, that when they're doing something, there's a tendency, and not of course a very good tendency, but it tends to be there, to always want something out of it for me, to take some percentage. But that, when it is mixed by karma or jnana, and devotional service is mixed by these tendencies, then it doesn't actually bring the result. The proper result is prema bhakti. So as long as it's misra bhakti or mixed bhakti, then the actual result won't manifest. So therefore, Sri Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Samhita Sinanekta Devotion, right in the beginning, anya avilasita sanyam jnanakama anavrita anukulena krishna nasila bhakti uttama. He defines, the first thing he does practically is define what pure devotional service is. He tells us this is the practice, or the consciousness on this level is what is required to attain the result. So here, more on the same topic. What is called renunciation? You should note to be the same as yoga. This is the second verse. Yam sannyasam viti prahu yogam tam viti vandava. What is called renunciation or giving up is connection. Know it to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. In other words, if you want to, so Krishna's taking it the other way than I was mentioning it. I was saying that if you want to be truly renounced, you're going to have to be linked with the Supreme. And here, Krishna is saying, if you want to link with the Supreme, you're going to have to become renounced. Because if you want to pick up the bead bag, you have to put down the stainless steel cup to pick it up. Because if you try to do both, well, you probably did it. Which is usually what I try to do. I try to do both. But it's not effective. No. So one has to
develop detachment,
and otherwise won't be able to
gain attachment.
For one can never become a yogi. One cannot connect with Krishna unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. That's also described by Prahlad Maharaj to his father, Lord Sringadeva. In one sense, it's quite humorous. He asks, Hiranyakashipu asks his son, what did you learn in school? What is the best thing you have heard? And Prahlad Maharaj, in a very innocent way, because he's a boy, and it's also, he's only like 5 years old, and so innocent. And it's so interesting that practically that's the first example in the Bhagavatam of someone who's not practicing to become a pure devotee, but who already is a pure devotee, and he's just this little boy who has such an innocent heart. He's so innocent. His father is like the greatest asura, demonic person in the world, and he's so against Vishnu, and he's like, he's trying to take over the whole universe for himself, and he succeeded in doing it. And he asks his son, what did you learn in school today? And his father sometimes asks the boys, did your father ask you that? Yes? Did your father ask you that when you went home? What did you learn? Did you tell him Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam? But that's what Prahlad did. He just said, he said hearing and chanting about Krishna, basically. And then his father was so upset, of course, because Vishnu was his enemy. So he sent the boy back to school first. He just thought that he's just whimsically picked this up somewhere. And then his two teachers, Sandana Malka, tried to re-educate Prahlad. And then they brought him after some time in front of his father again. His father asked him again, what's the best thing? And then he actually said, my dear father, you should renounce your material life. Grihamandakupam vanam gatoyad hanamast hadim asriyeta. You should renounce everything because it's not good what you're doing. You should renounce everything, and vanam guto yad, you should go to the forest, and hadim, ashrayata, you should take shelter of Lord Hari. And he said, so Hiranyakashipu got so furious, and he said, where did you learn this? Where did you learn this? Who has taught you this, to take sides with the enemy? And Prahlad answered, and this was the verse, and it was, Matirna Krishna Paratakswatova Mityo Vipadyeta Griha Vatanam Andante Govir Vishatatanisnam Punas Punas Charvata Charvananam. that, don't worry, Father. Materially Krishna means the inclination to love Krishna. You won't get it. Don't worry. Don't be afraid. Because you have andante gobhya. You are completely uncontrolled in your desires to enjoy in this world. And that's the ideal for a materialist, in one sense. That's what they want. They want to accumulate so much wealth, because wealth means shakti. Shakti means power, and power to do what? To enjoy, to control. Without controlling, you cannot enjoy. So the effort is to amass power, to control for the purpose of enjoying. And if I'm in my amassment of power, if you come into my field of activities, you are my enemy, and I will kill you. This is what it's like in the animal kingdom, too, in a very, very heavy way. Oh, if you come into my field and compete with me, you are my enemy, and I will kill you. So this is the consciousness born of false ego, and it's based on attachment. Andante Gobhya, and Hiranyakashipu was very successful in this, and Prahlada just told him, you won't catch this, because if you have these type of desires and you're cultivating this mood, then Materna Krishna, the intelligence or consciousness will never, ever flow towards Krishna. If people talk to you, if a group of people get together and try to convince you, nothing will have any effect on your consciousness if you have this deeply implanted in your heart. So he was telling his father, so don't worry, what I have, this disease, you'll never catch it. Don't worry about a thing. So one can't become a yogi, one cannot connect, unless one renounces the desire for sense gratification. But the other is true too, that one can't renounce the desire for sense gratification until one connects. Param dristva navartate visyavini vartante. Do you know that one? That one. Vishyavanivartante, from the second chapter, I believe. One needs that higher taste. So it's sort of like a dance, in a sense. That you go forward and taste more about Krishna, and then you naturally become more detached. And if you become a little more detached, that allows you to dedicate your consciousness more to Krishna. And then, which invokes more detachment, and it goes back and forth in that way. Prabhupada says in his purport, when a person is fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself. So, we can read Prabhupada's purport in a very, very simple way, and think we've read it so many times before. But what is he actually saying? When a person is fully engaged, so there's the word fully in there, that means not partially engaged, but completely. That means one's body, one's words, one's mind, completely engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So not in the mechanical service of the Lord, or not doing it because you have to do it or you're supposed to do it, but doing it, but in when you're engaged in transcendental loving service of the Lord, fully engaged, such a person, he is pleased in himself. So that brings to the person that full engagement in loving Krishna, in Krishna's loving service, it brings to himself such pleasure
and thus is no longer engaged in sense gratification and fruitive activity. He's overwhelmed by the happiness, and therefore the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they can live such materially minimized existence with no internet connection. Can you imagine? How could they do that? And they had no one even left.
They had wireless for a moment.
Yeah, they did, but they had a direct connection with immediate, instantaneous download of transcendental ecstasy. But they were living with no possessions, practically speaking. No possessions at all, no fixed source of income, no fixed source of food. But of course, the culture itself was supportive. But they had nothing fixed. When Mahaprabhu took sannyas, and when he left the home of Advaita Charja heading towards Jagannath Puri, he was with Mukunda Datta, Jagannanda Pandit, Nityananda Prabhu, Damodar Pandit, and he asked them, as soon as they left, one of the first things he said to them, have any of you brought any provisions or like a second set of clothes? And they said, no, we wouldn't do that without independently. And he said, good. Because that, etam sarastaya paratmanistam, that places one, that mood of no credit cards, no this, no that, just it's me and dependence on Krishna. So it's very romantically wonderful. But one has to be very, very fixed, because we could be very, very, we can think, oh, this is so wonderful, I'm just going to depend on Krishna. And whatever he gives me is okay, as long as, you know, I'll get exactly what I want. But soon as, because that's usually the mood we enter into this, the arrangement with Krishna, and expecting that I don't know what the right metaphor is, everything, like a fairy tale, I'd say, chant Hare Krishna, let's be happy, and everything's going to happen right, and all my stocks will go up, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not like that. It's not like that. I mean, Krishna can make it like that, but usually, as far as I've seen it, it hasn't. It hasn't, and it doesn't, and it won't. So when things happen that aren't according to our idealistic, imaginary plan, then we tend to withdraw our trust, our faith, and withdraw our dependence on Krishna. Well, if he's going to be like that and not do what I want and give me everything that I think that I want and I need, then I'm not going to be his friend anymore. Or I'll be his friend, but a little bit distant, maybe. So this is the tendency of a conditioned soul. This is the very strong tendency. But that is not what Krishna consciousness is. Krishna consciousness is, it actually begins with a giving of the self to Krishna. Go to Devaranam. Not really just begins then, but because that's obviously, there's a progression that brings one to that stage. But that's where bhakti begins, with saranagati, or surrender of I am yours, Krishna, and whatever you choose to do with me, that is, I accept that as your mercy. And perhaps I deserve worse, and I accept that as the best medicine for me. I was so attached. One time I went to a city in China called Wuxi. Have you been there? Did you know it's one of the cartoon capitals of China? Mm-hmm. Did you know that? And now you know it. And there was, and there was this one, and when I went there, there was just a bunch of old Chinese ladies there, devotees, and maybe 12 of them. And I was thinking, what am I doing here? I like to talk philosophy, or something like that. They weren't the right kind of people to talk philosophy to. I could tell, Sudama. So anyway, and then just in talking to them, the youngest of the ladies was maybe in her 42, 45, something, 40 maybe. And she said to a translator that she had 8 years ago or 7 years ago, she got cancer. And she almost died. But then it was in remission and everything like that. And I said, well, I asked her, well, how about, what did you think? I was hinting around, what did you think about what Krishna has, about what happened? You know, those things aren't supposed to happen, right? When you begin chanting Hare Krishna, you're supposed to just, all your diseases go away, and you live happily ever after. I wasn't so silly, but I said, what were you thinking? And she said, oh, I was thinking that Krishna was so kind to me because I was too attached to material things. It's quite shocking to me that she was, it's easy to preach about these things to everyone else, but this lady was, she was living it. And then one other lady said, she had some friends with her, and she was talking about her life. And she was saying, well, none of their husbands were devotees. And one lady said, well, we moved to another part of town where there were no devotees. And I thought that Krishna would never send me to a place where there are no devotees. So I began praying to him to show me who the devotees nearby were. And then she pointed to two ladies and said, and then they came. And now we have kirtan in my home every night. But what am I going to be teaching them again? And then the other group, and I said, how many of you have been to Vrindavan? And they all raised their hand almost, and I was so surprised. And they were saying, oh, it was so wonderful. I was crying when I was leaving, and I just hope that when I die, I can die in Vrindavan. I'm talking like this. These are just some old Chinese ladies in Wuxi. And I'd come to teach them Bhagavad Gita or something like that. So anyway, when a person is fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is pleased in himself. He actually experiences such pleasure. And thus, he is no longer engaged in sense gratification or in fruitive activities. Fruitive activities, again, means working for something other than Krishna's pleasure. Prabhupada continues, otherwise, if one isn't doing this, one must be engaged in sense gratification, since one cannot live without engagement. Inactivity, in other words, is not an option. Without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. What do we mean? What does Prabhupada mean when he says extended selfish activities? But what is the extendedness of it?
What is the
conception? Yes, this is my, it's me, and then when we take the sense of me and impose it upon things that aren't actually me, it becomes mine. Without Krishna consciousness, one must be always seeking self-centered or extended selfish activities. In Japan, Prabhupada sent one time in 1970, he sent taped message to the Japanese people. And in it, it was very similar to what he had written in The Nectar of the Ocean. And he said that we all have a tendency to love. And when we're very, very young, our loving tendency just goes to our mother, and then it expands to our father, and then further to the brothers and sisters, and then to our friends, and then to our own, we get our own family. So in other words, the loving tendency has this tendency to expand. And then Prabhupada explained that even if it expands to all humans, and when someone is very humanitarianly, as a humanitarian, or is his loving tendency and his concern isn't limited to himself or his family or his community or something like that, but extends to all human beings, such a person is such an unselfish person is revered and greatly respected in society. When someone is helping others, they're more respected really than anyone else, practically speaking. Someone is giving up his own life for the benefit of others. Unselfishness is so much appreciated even today. But Prabhupada explained that even if our loving tendency is expands to the degree of not only all humans but all living entities in this world, because there are people who want to care, who are compassionate to human beings, but they don't mind killing all the animals.